program you're about to hear involves slack confidence, disparity, satire, and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the church of genius, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor and should cast no reflection on the highest standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech.
On a Sunday morning, she looked at me with eyes of love as the choir sang her hallelujah. Hallelujah! Hallelujah!
This hysterical witch is after me.
I feel we're bonded in our hate for this she-demon.
And
Oh, yes, seekers. Welcome. Welcome to Bob's Slack Time Funhouse. And yes, welcome to church. Yes, this is a church, seekers. No matter how totally wasted and off the mark we get here. In fact, yes, that is a major cornerstone of our subgenius doctrines, dear seekers. But to tell you the truth, oh, I've been slacking off way too much for a woman in my position. Yes, sometimes I get stuck on the floozy end of my name, and I forget that it starts with Reverend. Not sister, not mister, but Reverend. Reverend Susie the Floozy, and that means that I am a preacher. And seekers, you know, that don't come easy to me, no matter how easy I come, because you know as well as I do that I don't tell you what to think, do, and say. Frankly speaking, it's a responsibility that I'd really rather not have. I'd rather just go on suggesting that you get right with Bob. Yeah. Yeah. Like maybe putting a germ of the thought in your head that, oh, maybe you ought to consider thinking about, oh, perhaps someday looking into the slack thing, right? Well, get your ass off that couch and assume the position you crave in Bobby's, because there's a change coming up tonight in the funhouse. Oh, yes, seekers, because I've been way too much of a lazy fairy with your spiritual guidance, but no more. The gloves are off tonight. And they're back on. Oh, yes, it's time for some hands-on treatment, seekers, and I don't want to get this gunk all over my nice manicure. Oh, and you know how ugly my shows get when I'm in these moods, right? Well, hell, seekers, you better get out the no-dos and styptic pencils for this one, because it may well be my ugliest show of all. And that's saying a lot. Oh, but yes, I still feel compelled to warn you. This is going to be a long, brutal road, and it's uphill all the way. Because tonight, seekers, it's the attack of the freaking know-it-alls. Oh, I've been saving this one for you for years. Yes, the preachiest, self-righteous bastards and bastardettes ever committed to vinyl. Because after all, I don't have to practice what I preach, because I'm not the kind of person I'm preaching to.
Easy, ever easy. With each new day, it's easy to fall, to follow the flesh. To find the free way out is ever so easy.
Before we buy, we must test the product.
Is it really guaranteed forever against rust and moth? Will it surely not decay?
I beg pardon, Lord, for the questioning, but this is, after all, a lifetime investment. There'll be no second time around, so far as we know, so we have to test.
Slam the doors.
Kick the tires.
Try it on for size.
Take it out of the light.
Will it not shrink or fade in the bright sunshine? Or tear under stress or dissolve in the rain? And could you wrap it up to go? Nothing fancy, just a bit of plain paper and a length of string. You know, make it easy to carry.
Make the faith easy to take from place to place. And then I'll never be without it.
2,000 years, 1,000 tears, how many broken dreams?
The way is hard that leads to life,
and those who find it are few.
Can't you understand, Lord? We just can't see where all this is taking us.
All around us there are the nonsense happenings that seem to persist day after day, grating against all logic, against all that would make sense.
How can we know the way?
And someone said late at night, last night, or perhaps 2,000 years ago,
the way is always waiting for the wanderers, for the wanderers. And it is there in the winter of doubt, and it persists through the flood of tears. And even when all is mired in misery and pain, the way is waiting.
I am the way, he said. I am the way.
And there will be sturdy wood and sharp nails of hatred holding me ever secure, never able to reach out again. And I will offer the words that I found hiding in the smile of a little boy.
So I walked up closer, and there was the big crowd. I moved my way right in the very front, and I noticed there were only a few people that seemed to be sad, especially this old lady and young man. I walked up to them, and I put my arms around them, and I said, "What's wrong?" The lady said, "That's my son." "Well, get him down off of there." I looked up, and there was this man and two other men. Oh, they were beaten so bad. I looked down at the lady. I said, "Lady, you want him to die, your own son?" She said, "I can't help it." I looked at the young man. I said, "Are you his friend?" He said, "Oh, yes, I'm John. This is Mary." "Well, John, get him down off of there. He's going to die, I think. He's bleeding all over the place." He said, "I can't." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because the Savior said he came to fulfill all the scriptures." Well, I didn't understand that one little bit. There was a sensing in the air that was just something. I walked up to the front. I said, "I've got to find out what they're talking about." I walked up to the very front, and I looked up. And there was a man who had been beaten so bad. If you looked at his face, you couldn't even tell he was human. They took their hands of soldiers and they ripped out cords and chunks of his face. They beat him so bad it looked like with the cat of nine tails that, oh, he was a bloody mess. And then they stuck some big stickers on his head. Oh, you could see the skin as it overlaid the thorns. And they put some metal stickers in his hands and in his feeties. And I looked up at him and I said, "Sir, what's your name?" And he said,
"Jesus."
"Jesus? Why are you doing this?" And he said,
"Born of a simple woman, in a stable, simple, fair. Many, many a year ago, many, many a care ago, this simple he arrived on earth, man's sorrowing wheel to share. Thank God he came. Thank God he came to be. Now, he never saw New York, L.A., the smog nor London wet. He never rode a Cadillac, never mingled with the set. No General Motors, no Acapulco, no intellect, no atom, no jet. These things, places, people, well, they didn't exist, not yet. His mode of transportation by the Sea of Galilee, a pair of legs, a pair of feet that moved on constantly. His message, life is all, devoted all exclusively to love. Render unto Caesar. Now that's what the good book says, but far more important, unto God. The simple truth, the simple truth, the simple truth of love. Help thy friend, love thy neighbor, and thine enemy as well. For God is love, and love is God. Love be. Now, the rulers, the Romans, the politicians, the greedy ones, the enemies, even his true friends, fearful of his simple love, his God is love philosophy. Betrayal, torture, death by Galilee. The place was called Golgotha, barren, empty, full of pain. And there suffered he in misty rain, this man of Galilee. The blood, the water mixed with love. Forgive them, Lord, forgive. Taken from his rack of torment, in a borrowed grave he lie, through the pity of a fellow man who cried, a human cry. And in his bloody rags, his only claim of earth, not of the sky, this young, brave man, this simple man of love, he lie. And now we say to one and all, this to one and all, we say to all the armies, navies, governments, and spaceships far away, this simple man of love was never royalty nor king, yet his truth goes marching on. And he never wrote a book. He never had the golden business dream. He never had the who's who looked. He never made the college scene. Yet all the congresses and parliaments that have ever convened, with all the popes, presidents, prime ministers, puppet machines, all the powers and all the fools that have ever ruled, put together, have not affected humanity, history, future to be as powerfully as this simple man of love, this man of Galilee, who was born of a simple woman in a stable, simple, bare. This man of love did come to us. This man of love, aware of light, of life, of love, aware of all, aware. His love, his truth goes marching on.
Seekers, oh, what a slow start to what is going to be a fairly promising show. A lot of promises are going to be made tonight, and a lot of regrets are going to be left. We've already started off with a little of the Box Tops and some Jimmy Swaggart and a little Buddy Merrill. Some Beautiful Day, a rock musical about Jesus. Little Marky, some child evangelist who sounds just like Cartman. That last spoken word bit, born of a simple woman, was done by that rum pot B-movie actor Cameron Mitchell. And here's a little Anita Bryant. Oh, whale, you orange sucker. Oh, yes, seekers. Things get fairly ugly when it comes to religion. But, you know, it gets pretty damn ugly when it comes to the family, too.
Son, listen to me. Don't keep going getting all those enemies. You ask my reaction to long hair or beards on young people. Some great men have worn long hair and beards. George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. If to you long hair or a beard is a symbol of independence, if you believe in your heart that the principles of this country, our heritage, is worthy of this display of pride that all men shall remain free, that free men at all times will not inflict their personal limitations of achievement on others, demand your own rights as well as the rights of others, and be willing to fight for this right, you have my blessing. You ask that I not judge you merely as a teenager, to judge you on your own personal habits, abilities, and goals. This is a fair request, and I promise I will not judge any person only as a teenager. If you will constantly remind yourself that some of my generation judges people by their race, their belief, or the color of their skin, and that this is no more right than saying all teenagers are drunken dope addicts or glue sniffers. If you will judge every human being on his own individual potential, I will do the same. You ask me if God is dead. This is a question each individual must answer within himself. With a warm summer day, with all its brightness, all its sound, all its exhilarating breathiness, just happened. God is love. Remember that God is a guide and not a stormtrooper. Realize that many of the past and present generation, because of a well-intentioned but unjustifiable misconception, have attempted to legislate morality. This created part of the basis for your generation's need to rebel against our society. With this knowledge, perhaps your children will never ask, is God dead? I sometimes think mankind is attempting to work him to death. You ask my opinion of draft card burners. I would answer this way. All past wars have been dirty, unfair, immoral, bloody, and second-guessed. However, history has shown most of them necessary. If you doubt that our free enterprise system in the United States is worth protecting, if you doubt the principles upon which this country was founded, that we remain free to choose our religion, our individual endeavors, our method of government, if you doubt that each free individual in this great country should reap rewards commensurate only with his own efforts, then it's doubtful you belong here. If you doubt that people to govern us should be selected by their desire to allow us to strive for any goal we feel capable of attaining, then it's doubtful you should participate in their selection. If you are not grateful to a country that gave your father the opportunity to work for his family, to give you the things you have, and you do not feel pride enough to fight for your right to continue in this manner, then I assume the blame for your failure to recognize the true value of our birthright. I would remind you that your mother will love you no matter what you do, because she is a woman. I love you too, son. I also love our country and the principles for which we stand. If you decide to burn your draft card and burn your birth certificate at the same time, that moment on, I have no son.
Open letter to the youth of America. Dear youth, I'm writing this letter with a heavy hand. There are great troubles in this glorious land that us old people once died to save. And I feel that today's young need to listen to the raspy voice of today's old. Us old people are the ones who built the toll roads and the condominiums, you know. We invented the electric pencil sharpener and the disposable stove. We're oldies but goodies. After all, who founded this great land but old people? Why, George Washington would be over 200 if he was alive today. Marco Polo, he'd be over 600. You have no respect for the old values like money. Without money, where would our millionaires be? Great Americans like Scrooge McDuck. Pay attention, youth. Make sure you wear good, sturdy shoes. God only gives you one pair of feet, and if you ruin them with bad shoes, you'll end up walking weird like Fred Barton works out at the pharmacy. And the way you live, all together in communes, eating together, sleeping together. Shameful! It's uncivilized!
Right on!
Not to live like us old people do in a boarding house. The idea of getting married when you're 18, 19 years old? Foolishness! You should wait till you're old and have children of your own. And about your hair. Long hair is okay with me. Some of our greatest Americans had long hair. Like that famous actor, John Wilkes Booth and Eleanor Roosevelt. And when I hear you disagreeing all the time disagreeing, that's all right, youth. It's American to disagree. As American as apple pie or a prune Danish. But if you're gonna disagree, you should disagree with another youth, not with us old people. And another thing, youth, you don't eat food. It's something else, something that deeply disturbs all of America. Youth, drugs. You should never take more than 2 aspirins. 2 aspirins every 4 hours. Avoid continued use. Do not operate heavy machinery. Void or prohibited by law.
The other day, my little girl climbed on my lap and looked into my eyes and said, "Daddy, what's America?" Well, you know, that's not the kind of a question you can answer immediately. But after some thought, my mind raced back to a hot August day in 1943 when I stood on the deck of an American submarine somewhere in the South China Sea. And I wondered then if I'd ever be lucky enough to set foot again on this hallowed ground that we call America. I immediately envisioned the Golden Gate Bridge, shrouded by an early morning mist, the seemingly endless wheat fields of the great Midwest, and the towering majesty of the Washington Monument. And then I welled up with tears as I recalled some of the famous Americans and the great things they gave to mankind. Who could ever forget the heartbreak of psoriasis? And Dr. Scholl, who gave us the odor eaters? And what about Colonel Sanders, who lets us choose between the regular or the crispy? And Mr. Whipple, who keeps us from squeezing the Charmin? And Handy Wipes and Dentsu Cream and Ring Around the Collar and Earl Shive, who paint any car for $39.95, including the chrome.
We've done it, brother. We've done it hand in hand. We've done it, sister. With love we've built this land. It's been 200 years of blood, sweat, and tears.
Seekers, I almost forgot. Yes, let me get some credits out of the way and I'll tell you about where we're about to go. Oh, we heard Walter Brennan with Mama Sang a Song.
No, we didn't.
And then Daddy, I'm Proud to Be Your Son by Lorne Green. Victor Lundberg with Open Letter to My Teenage Son. And then Conception Land with Open Letter to Youth of America, that Walter Brennan sound-alike. And that was just Shadow Shay from the only CD I'll be playing tonight. But you know, Seekers, I've been remiss. I forgot to tell you all about the rabid pro-American Canadian contingent. Oh, yes. Yeah, here's somebody that can explain it for you on the other side of a 45 here, but unlike most of the things tonight, there's no background music, so I'll have to add some special Canadian music to spice it up.
Spoken by a man who is also an American, in the sense that he is a resident of North America. But since
simple and deliberate. At times, in sharpened, flash, and vulgar, it used language which has expanded the frontiers of accepted usage. It captures politicians and punctures inflated egos. He defies laws which he considers unjust or stupid. He is known nationally and popularly as a television performer. He is first and foremost a news conduit. He is an old man, however, he has memories which reach back to the days when he was footloose in India and China, and a score of the exotic lands of this earth as a foreign correspondent. He is firstly proud that he has made it. He has often commented critically about individual citizens of the United States and the actions of its government. But he has a long memory of what good deeds. One day in June 1973, pondering the story of the disaster in the United States, thinking of the problem that would upset the people of America, he became indignant. Indignant that other men and other nations have forgotten the non-honorable path the United States has pursued at this moment in time. And he turned to his microphone and he recalled for his own country, the center of modern America. He told them as a familiar, before America's country was the credit, customer, supplier, friend, and ally of the United States since the war of 1812. As the result, the words of Gordon Sinclair was the end.
States dollar took another pounding on German, French, and British exchanges this morning, hitting the lowest point ever known in West Germany. It has declined there by 41% since 1971, and this Canadian thinks it's time to speak up for the Americans as the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people in all the world. As long as 60 years ago, when I first started to read newspapers, I read of floods on the Yellow River and the Yangtze. Well, who rushed in with men and money to help? The Americans did, that's who. They have helped control floods on the Nile, the Amazon, the Ganges, and the Niger. Today, the rich bottom land of the Mississippi is underwater, and no foreign land has sent a dollar to help. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent, Britain and Italy were lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans, who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debts. None of those countries is today paying even the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the franc was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who propped it up, and their reward was to be insulted and swindled on the streets of Paris. And I was there. I saw that. When distant cities are hit by earthquake, it's the United States that hurries in to help. Managua, Nicaragua, is one of the most recent examples. So far this spring, 59 American communities have been flattened by tornadoes. Nobody has helped. The Marshall Plan, the Truman Policy, all pump billions upon billions of dollars into discouraged countries. And now newspapers in those countries are writing about the decadent, war-mongering Americans. Now, I'd like to see just one of those countries that is gloating over the erosion of the United States dollar build its own airplane. Come on now, you, let's hear it. Does any country in the world have a plane to equal a Boeing jumbo jet, the Lockheed TriStar, or the Douglas 10? If so, why don't they fly them? Why do all international lines except Russia fly American planes? Why does no other land on Earth even consider putting a man or a woman on the moon? You talk about Japanese technocracy and you get radios. We talk about German technocracy and you get automobiles. We talk about American technocracy and you find men on the moon not once but several times and safely home again. You talk about scandals and the Americans put theirs right in the store window for everybody to look at. Even the draft dodgers are not pursued and hounded. They're right here on our streets in Toronto. Most of them, unless they're breaking Canadian laws, are getting American dollars from law and all at home to spend up here. When the Americans get out of this bind, as they will, who can blame them if they said they hell with the rest of the world? Let somebody else buy the bombs. Let somebody else build or repair foreign dams or design foreign buildings that would shake apart in earthquakes. When the railways of France and Germany and India were breaking down through age, it was the Americans who rebuilt them. and the Pennsylvania Railroad and the New York Central one broke, nobody loaned them an old caboose. Hold up my steamboat. I can name to you 5,000 times when the Americans laced to the help of other people in trouble. Can you name to me even one time when someone else laced to the Americans in trouble? I don't think we'll outside help even during the San Francisco earthquake. Our neighbors have faced it alone. And I, one Canadian, do a damn time of hearing them kicked around. They'll come out of this thing with their flag high. And when they do, they're entitled to thumb their noses at the lands that are gloating over their present troubles. I hope Canada is not one of these. But there are many strong, self-righteous Canadians. And finally, the American Red Cross was told at its 48th annual meeting in New Orleans this morning that it was, quote, this year's disaster, with the year less than half over, has taken it all, and nobody, but nobody, has helped.
Yes, Seekers. Just hang on for a moment while I cue something. We're going to try a bold experiment here. Let me cue this up. You see, Gordon Sinclair wasn't the only Canadian to record that piece. It turned out Gordon Sinclair was simply the Canadian that wrote that piece. And every Canadian that's followed along afterwards has felt compelled to cover it for some reason. I have two different versions here, one by a Canadian named Robert Marshall and one by a Canadian named Byron McGregor. And you know, Seekers, I'm just perverse enough to play these at the same time.
The United States took another pounding on German, French, and British exchanges.
The United States dollar took another pounding on German, French, and British exchanges this morning, hitting the lowest point ever known in West Germany. It has declined there by 41% since 1971, and this Canadian thinks it's time to speak up for the Americans as the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people in all the earth. As long as 60 years ago, when I first started to read newspapers, I read of floods on the Yellow River and the Yangtze. Who rushed in with men and money to help? The Americans did. They have helped control floods on the Nile, the Amazon, the Ganges, and the Niger. Today, the rich bottom land of the Mississippi is underwater, and no foreign land has sent a color to help. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent, Britain and Italy were lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans, who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions of debts. None of those countries is today paying the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the place was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who rushed in, and the reward was to be insulted and swindled on the streets of Paris. I was there. I saw it. When distant cities are hit by earthquakes, it is the United States that hurries in to help. Nicaragua, Nicaragua is one of the most recent examples. So far, this wave, it's denied American communities and enlightened by Korea. Nobody has helped. The strange thing is, it wasn't the Canadians alone that felt compelled to do things to this.
My fellow Americans, your president took another pounding in Time, Newsweek, and the Post this morning. Let me make this perfectly clear. As long as 2.5 years ago, when I first started to read the newspapers, the press badgered me in Washington, insulted me at Key Biscayne, crucified me at San Clemente, and now they want to roast me on the Dean Martin show. I'd like to see just one of those editors who is gloating over my present troubles build his own flagpole on Key Biscayne. Make no mistake about this. Cambodia, Saigon, and to a lesser extent, Detroit, were lifted out of the debris of war by this administration, who poured in billions of dollars and forgave millions of sins. And not one of those communities, even so much, as offered to pay my expenses to Florida for Christmas. Come on, let's hear it. Does any other country in the world have a leader with Air Force One, 57 blue suits, and 5,000 pounds of scrap metal on the moon? Why do all international airlines, except Russia, fly hijacked American planes? You talk about Japanese technocracy, you get radios. You talk about German technocracy, you get automobiles. You talk about American technocracy, and you get the Track 2 razor and the orange-flavored breakfast drink that was taken safely to the moon, not once, but several times, and home again. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. You talk about scandals. As you may recall, this administration has placed its scandal in the lobby of the Watergate Hotel for all the world to see. I was there. I saw it. Make no mistake about this. When I get out of this mess, as I will, who could blame me if I said, poop on everything? Let someone else build hotels on Park Place and Boardwalk. When the tracks of the B&O, the Reading, and the Short Line break down through age, it will not be your president who rebuilds them. I can name you various times when your president has rushed in to help other people, but I can only name one executive secretary who came to the aid of her president. I don't recall any outside help during the Senate hearings. I have faced it alone, and I'm one executive who's darn tired of being kicked around. I will come out of this bind with my head held high, and when I do, I am entitled to thumb my nose at the politicians who are gloating over my present troubles. And there are many smug, self-righteous politicians. When Phoebe and the boys discovered at our weekly poker game that I was broke, nobody would even lend me 1 gallon of gas. Nobody helped. And I'm not a crook.
Yes, that was Chris Glendon, and this is Gabe Kaplan. Yes, that Gabe Kaplan.
Hello, I'm a Canadian, and I think it's just about time that someone spoke up for the Americans. I speak up for the Canadians, but there's a bigger record market in America. The rest of the world is unfair to the Americans. Do you remember the last time a Korean family adopted an American child? Did you ever receive a care package from Pakistan? Did you ever hear the truth broadcast over the voice of Poland? The United States has sent millions of dollars in clothing abroad. And now, while young people are running around naked on their college campuses, has anybody sent them a pair of shorts? Nobody ever helps the Americans. During the San Francisco earthquake, the rest of the world stood by and watched Clark Gable and Jeanette McDonald try to crawl out of the rubble. And how about during the longest day, when John Wayne stormed on the beaches at Normandy? Did anyone come up to him and say, Duke, you're too old for this. Get back in the boat. You talk about Japanese know-how and you'll get cameras. You talk about French know-how and you'll get automobiles. You talk about American know-how and you'll get Japanese cameras, French automobiles. And then there's food. Who else has the Big Mac? The Whopper? The Jumbo Jack? If so, why don't they eat them? Why has no one else ever equaled the American hamburger? And airplanes, who can say, fly me, I'm Connie, and I really move my tail for you.
She does.
Could any other country pass the Viva paper towel test? Does any other country have little men in boats floating around in their toilets? Who would blame the Americans if they sent Yul Gibbons over to Russia to eat the Kremlin? And me, this Canadian's not going to stop complaining till I get my picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone. Want to get my picture on the cover.
I, Reverend Susie the Floozy, am an American. And being an American is a special distinction, one which carries with it all the rights and privileges accorded the dominant species of a planet. Being an American means that Almighty God has given me carte blanche to mold everyone
one in my crassly consumeristic image, forcing the Joneses to keep up with my Joneses until the whole world chokes to death on their trash, because I am an American. And because I am an American, I can roam the earth at will without bothering to learn any of the other languages. All I have to do is yell real loud in English, because I am an American. And they know it too. Yes, at red lights, I lean on the horn of my huge gas-guzzling American hogmobile, because 50% of the time, even at a red light, the puny foreign car in front of me will lurch out into traffic out of sheer terror, because I am an American. Yes, yes, the world kisses America's butt, and with good reason, because without America, there would be no Euro Disney. You try basing a theme park on Earth shoes. Crap! That's why I say with pride that I am an American. Being an American means I reserve the right to drive all over the parking lot for an hour to find a space right up front, because I am an American. Yes, I measure my consumption in gallons per mile. It's the American way. And as an American, I care more about what's on Goldie Hawn's mind than Stephen Hawking's. Yes, as an American, I can take the words and works of immortal Americans and cut them up and edit them together out of context and mix them with stripper music and farm animal sound effects and then broadcast it, because I am an American.
Now that I think of it, it's not such a bad deal.
Sure, America's wonderful. But let me tell you something right now. We didn't get that way without a lot of guts and love and determination and hard work by a lot of great people. People like Mr. Coffee, Tony Orlando, the Frito Bandito, Johnny Bench, the Fonz, Charlie Tuna, the Avon Lady, Mrs. Olson, and don't forget, the Tidy Bowl Man, Tony the Tiger, Ronald McDonald. What about Ralph Nader? The Jolly Green Giant. And don't you ever forget the man from GLAAD. Thanks to these great Americans, we now enjoy fewer cavities, better underarm protection, the 12-hour cold capsule, gentle shampoos, sweeter breath, the dry look, leisure suits, steel belt radials, Kurt Gowdy, and the All-American Trash Compactor. I looked at my lovely daughter, gave her a hug, and I said, "Honey, after seeing what America has today, your daddy somehow longs to be back on the deck of an American submarine somewhere in the South China Sea."
And we must endeavor to permeate every facet of American society.
It got crowded in the closet, so we're finally coming out. We're thumping on our Bibles and building up our clout. We're all the Lord's lieutenants, and there's nothing we can't do. To prove it, we're now making our political debut. Oh, we're the moral majority, we're holier than thou. By God, we're here to tell you what we will and won't allow. We're out to purge the nation of
of its humanistic bent. A separate church and state, we've simply given up for Lent.
Don't get us wrong, we still believe that prayers will save our souls. But when we want them answered, we'll say them at the polls. And talk about successes, we're as pleased as we can be. We've sent Jimmy back to Georgia, we've moved Bonzo to D.C.
We socked it to McGovern and to Culver, Church and Pye. We'll stack them up like cordwood, 'cause God is on our side. And that was just a preview of 1982. What we've got planned, sure to put the fear of God in you. 'Cause we're the moral majority, you better mend your ways. When we get done with liberals,
we're going after gays.
And once they see the light, we'll have to concentrate on Jews.
But what with all these commies, it'll be so hard to choose. I want to talk to you about heaven. You know, some of us are going to get there, and some of us are going to get there rich. But no one's going anywhere on a skimpy budget. You are my sheep, and as your shepherd, I want to increase your odds for salvation. As the good book says in Philodendron 7:13, you ain't going to get nothing for nothing. It takes money to run this church, the TV programs, and my Cadillac. You have any idea what just one of these little pinky rings cost me?
We never seem to get good press. It's always filthy lies.
Why, you can call my wife right now. I never proselytize.
And if we burn a book or two, it's 'cause they're so obscene. And heading up our list right now is Penthouse Magazine. 'Cause we're the moral majority, we're launching our attack. We'll ride the train to glory, 'cause we got the inside track. We've got the goods on ERA, Salt 2 has got to go. There never was the slightest doubt, the Bible tells us so.
Seekers. Oh yes, that was the Electric Church with Moral Majority, and before that, my I Am an American rant with Gallant Men behind it by the 1968 Avondale High School Band. Oh yes, this is the Mystic Moods version of Everybody's Talking with Cricket. Sounds like my house. Oh, and you know, Seekers, after listening to all of these jerks talking, reading us the riot act about what we think, do, and say, you know, I don't feel quite like bringing up the butt end of their horse suit, you know? So I'm just going to waste that degree I have in psychiatric proctology and let you slip the noose. You always come back. You always do. And I know that you don't come back for me. No, you're coming back every week for Bob. My ministry is small potatoes next to his blinding, slackful grace. You know, I'm the perfect example of the remora theory. You know, I'm just a remora sucking on a remora, sucking on a remora, sucking on the Dobbsian shark of slack. And if you start sucking on me, by that time, you ain't getting a whole lot of shark in your diet. So you ought to go suck at the Source Seekers. Yes, it's still in Cleveland, Ohio, at the sacred P.O. Box. Got a pencil? Let's all repeat it together, shall we? Write to Bob at P.O. Box 181-417. Cleveland Heights, Ohio, 44118. Send Bob the SASE and get the pornographers stoned to endless slack. Yes, here at the Church of the Subgenius, we don't have to give you values, just a good deal. And Seekers, look at our sign. It says over 1 million swerved. And that's just the beginning. But that's another story.
Christ.
I've always hated that creature, the way she
exploits
her cattle and everything.
Girl, that woman's about as subtle as a rhinoceros horn up the backside.
This is Dan Aykroyd. Yes, I'm actually playing Blues Brothers, but oh, wait till you get to the inflammatory political narrative. Fits in with tonight's theme. And after that, Seegers, looks like it's going to be sunny. Thanks for being along on this long, hard ride through Preacherville, and I'll try to be lighter next time. It looks like everything's up and running, so maybe I will be too. Good night.
Brother Jake, but right now I'd like to talk a little bit about this tune you're hearing. This is, of course, the Green Onions tune. It was a very, very big hit in the early 60s in this country, and of course, it was composed and recorded in Memphis, Tennessee, right here in the United States of America. You know, people, I believe that this tune can be equated with the great classical music around the world. Now you go to Germany, you got your Bach, your Beethoven, your Brahms. Here in America, you got your Fred McDowell, your Irving Berlin, your Glenn Miller, and your Booker T and the MGs, people. Another example of the great contributions in music and culture that this country's made around the world. And as you look around the round world today, you see this country's spurred. You see facts turned on this country. Well, people, I'm going to tell you something. This continent, North America, is the stronghold. This is where we're going to make our stand in this decade. Yeah, people. I got something to say to the State Department. I say take that archaic Monroe Doctrine and that Marshall Plan that says we're supposed to police force the world and throw it out. And stay home for the next 10 years, people. Stay right here. Enjoy the music and culture that is ours. Yeah, I got one more thing to say. I'm just talking about the music, people, and what it does to me. And that is, as you look around the world, you go to Soviet Union or Great Britain or France, you name any country, everybody is doing flips and twists just to get into a genuine pair of American blue jeans. And to hear this music, and we've got it all here. We'll be right back.
Oh, before I forget, by the way, I used to strip to this one. Oh, there's a vivid picture for you. Another great Canadian and rabid American, Dan Aykroyd. I think I'll leave the flag waving to those guys. They've got the best take on it. Oh, but it really is good night, Seekers. Sleep tight. And rest assured that next week the Lymph Node Institute will be reading your beads as per usual. Good night.
Worst episode ever.